So good morning. Thanks for coming out. It's early. Appreciate everybody getting here so early. We're going to spend a little bit of time today talking about UBCM funding programs. I'm going to turn the clinic over to Glenn Brown. Just as a quick introduction, Glenn runs our Victoria office where we do most of our UBCM funding programs out of. Glenn, in a previous career, worked with another level of government called the province of BC. So he's familiar with some of these grant programs from the other side of the fence as well. So this will be a bit of a flyby today, a bit of an introductory piece intended just to advise you of what's out there and some of the things you might see coming or hear about coming across your council or board tables in the next year or so. So with that, I'll turn the clinic over to Glenn Brown. He's going to speak for a little while. We'll have ample time for questions at the end, and we'll conclude by 8:30. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Gary. Good morning, everybody. So as Gary mentioned, my name is Glenn Brown. I've spent probably the last 15 years working with local government infrastructure and finance and focused a lot on funding programs. So that's the development and administration of funding programs, both at the provincial and provincial federal level. Now coming to UBCM, I'm responsible for running and administering a number of programs that UBCM is responsible for. So not sure how this works. And that was not the button I was supposed to push, apparently.
Just be like George pointed at this.
So my first slide, as you can see, should I push that one again?
I think it might have gone. So just left.
There you go. Thank you. All right, so a bit of presentation overview. Really talking about sort of three areas of funding. So primarily is the gas tax fund. That is a big fund. UBCM is responsible for administering that through an agreement with the federal and provincial government. Secondly is a local government program services. So that's an area of UBCM that's responsible for administering a number of smaller programs. These programs are provincially and or provincially federally funded. And I'm going to end talking a little bit about the new Building Canada Fund, in particular the Small Communities Fund. That's a program that we're not responsible for administering, but it is a program that's available right now, and I thought I'd provide a little bit of information with that. So just so I know, how many are newly elected in the room? So and the rest are returning, and CAOs got at least one, two, right, okay. So the gas tax fund. So in 2014, we signed a new agreement that extended the program for another 10 years. That new agreement took effect of April 1st. It was actually signed in May 22nd, I believe, 2014. So the term of the agreement is 10 years. And it'll deliver $1.3 billion over the first 5 years. It's anticipated to be around, it's about $2.76 billion over the 10-year program. They've actually talk about 5 years only because the funding is based on population and there's a new census coming out in 5 years. So the numbers will be sort of redone after 5 years with the new census. UBCM administers the gas tax fund, so this is fairly unique in the country. There's only two provinces where a local government association administers the program. That's in BC and Ontario. The rest of the provinces and territories it's the territorial or provincial government that actually administer the program. Going into these the negotiations for the new agreement, UBCM reached out to the membership and talked to local governments, asked what were the good things about the previous agreement, what were the bad things, and got your input. And we're looking at probably three main areas. One was ensuring that we had a long-term agreement, which I think we've achieved with the 10 years. Another key area was expanding the project categories. And once successful again, and that wasn't only a BC ask, but I think across the country, local governments were very interested in having an expanded project category list. And I guess the third one was actually streamlining the programs, making it a little bit simpler for local governments to actually access and understand the program. So what has changed? I'm going to go over some of this. There's a lot of information here today. And I'll preempt my ending by letting you know that one of the big takeaways is just to understand that UBCM, particularly at the Victoria office, the staff that are managing this, they are a resource for you. So when you have questions or staff have questions, UBCM is there to answer them for you. So the estimated funding for BC, this is going over the 5 years, the first 5 years. As you can see, in year three and year five, there's a bit of a bump. The new agreement includes indexing, so the program overall is indexed at 2% per year. Within the agreements identified that indexing will only take effect in $100 million increments. So nationally, when $100 million is reached on indexing, it goes back into the program and then is just redistributed through the different jurisdictions. So that's where you see in year three and year five a bump, and that'll continue in $100 million increments and as I said, indexed 2% per year. So eligible project categories, that's a major change in the program. So historically, the previous program, these were the eligible categories. This is what I would refer to as the core infrastructure, core services that local governments provide. I still anticipate that the majority of work and projects that are being built will probably be still focused on this. But as I mentioned, the categories have expanded to now we have 18 eligible categories. So the new eligible categories, some of these may be of interest to you. Some of them may not be, obviously. Local and regional airports, short sea shipping, short line rail may not be areas that are of interest of you, particularly as a small community. Sport infrastructure, tourism, and cultural. So these are three areas that are new that I think a lot of local governments showed some interest and desire to be able to use the funding for these types of infrastructure projects. Brownfield redevelopment, broadband connectivity. Once again, we've certainly had a lot of inquiries about broadband, particularly in some of the rural areas where they do not have that connectivity, and previously it was not eligible. And a couple of others, recreation infrastructure and disaster mitigation. Once again, a lot of inquiries about these two particular areas. Recreation is certainly of interest to a number of communities, and one of the challenges that we've had with the new categories is that the federal government has not really been clear on defining, right? So where does it start? Where does it end? And we've been working with individual local governments who had interest or have interest in doing this in defining what is eligible and what is not. So if there you do have interest in these particular categories, the best thing to do is to contact us. One thing on the disaster mitigation that the federal government has been clear on, it is not to fund response infrastructure. So that includes rolling stock, such as fire trucks. And I think one of the things we did hear across the province was an interest to be able to fund things like fire trucks and fire halls. And our response back from the federal government is that that's not eligible. But once again, if these are areas that are of interest to you, the best thing to do is A, to talk to staff, and then B, to talk with the UBCM staff to ensure that the project that you're doing is eligible. So another area is capacity building. Capacity building refers to non-capital projects. Capacity building was eligible under the previous program. It was defined as integrated community sustainability planning. We've expanded it. Asset management planning is now a big part of the agreement and is captured under capacity building. So we've broken it down into sort of three main areas. So asset management and asset management type works. Long-term infrastructure planning really refers to those types of plans, master water plans, liquid waste management plans. So plans referring to the infrastructure required to provide a service. And integrated community sustainability plan is really more focused on land use planning, so OCPs, regional growth planning, and that sort of thing. So it is wide open, really, but it is an eligible category, and local governments are able to use their funding towards these types of projects. So another change within the gas tax agreement was streamlined program delivery. So we have three program areas now: Community Works Fund, Strategic Priorities Fund, and the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund. So gone is the tiering. So if those are familiar with the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3, also gone is the significant regional significant projects for the Tier 2 communities, regional districts. So those are gone, and now we're replacing them with three program areas. So just a graph sort of demonstrating how the funding is distributed within the three program areas. So the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund represents 49%, Community Works Fund is 40%, and then the Strategic Priorities Fund is the remaining. Once again, I mean, these are based on per capita, so it's all based on population from the regions. Another table sort of describing how the funding is within the GVRD and then the rest of the province. So within the GVRD and the member municipalities, 5% of the funding that's allocated to them goes to Community Works Fund, so that's the money that goes directly to you, and you make the decisions. 95% goes to the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund, and that's the transportation-type projects for within the Lower Mainland. For all other local governments in the province, 75% goes to Community Works Fund, and 25% goes to the pooled funding or the Strategic Priorities Fund. So the Community Works Fund. So the Community Works Fund is a direct allocation. So that's it is allocated to each local government twice a year. We're at the point where I think we have 100% of the local governments who have signed the agreement. So the money is flowing to you now under the new agreement. Excuse me. The allocation is a per capita base. There is a funding floor, so each local government receives $50,000, and then the top-up is based on per capita. If you are interested to know what your allocation is, those tables are actually available on our website. So the UBCM website is a great source for information with respect to this funding program, in particular the gas tax program. So by all means, go there and you'll actually be able to find your Community Works Fund allocation for the first 5 years. So the Community Works Fund is, like I said, a direct allocation. So local governments make the decisions on how that money's spent. Under the agreement, there's the parameters, so the framework on how you have to spend it. So obviously it has to be spent on an eligible project, and has to be used and for eligible expenses. Other than that, it's fairly wide open. It's based on priorities that are identified.
Is there reporting back on that?
There is reporting back on that, and I will get to that momentarily, but you're right, there is reporting. As with any funding program, there's usually some type of reporting back. For the Community Works Fund, I think it was about 40% of the total allocation. That is $514 million for the first 5 years, so going out to local governments. So the Greater Vancouver Regional Fund, as I said, that's pooled funding. It goes to transportation projects. For the first 5 years, it's approximately $650 million going to transportation projects in the Lower Mainland. Those projects will be identified by TransLink and approved by the GVR board. All this information is actually tabled in the agreement, and our next step with moving forward with this is to develop the actual funding agreement, the actual individual agreement between ourselves, TransLink, and GVRD. Strategic Priorities Fund. So that's an application-based funding program. As I said, the pooled funding. For the first 5 years, it's approximately $145 million. So it supports investments that are larger in scale, regional in importance, or innovative. Once again, captured by the 18 eligible project categories. So any of those eligible project categories are eligible projects under this program. The application, we're currently accepting applications right now, so that is open for applications, opened in December, so we launched in December, closing our first intake on April 15th. So we are anticipating that over the life of the program, we'll probably have, at a minimum, probably three intakes. We haven't determined how many intakes we'll have, but we certainly will have more than one. It will really be determined by the applications coming in, the ability of those applications to meet the program criteria and the approvals that are made, and then working with the province and the federal government determining when the next intake will be. So national objectives. This is important. If we go back historically to the program, it was all about environmental outcomes. So the previous agreement was about cleaner water, cleaner air, and greenhouse gas reduction. While those objectives were easier to obtain with the narrower eligible project categories, so water, wastewater. Now, with the expansion of project categories, I think the expansion of objectives had to happen. It's important to sort of understand this, and getting back to the reporting piece, which I'm about to talk to. But you know, the projects that you're proposing and moving forward with under this program, they have to be aligned with these national objectives. I mean, so there has to be some thought in how the project that you're moving forward with meets these national objectives. So as I said, it's expanded. So the clean environment is consistent with what the previous program was. In addition, we've got productivity and economic growth, strong cities and communities. Interesting enough, you know, we asked the federal government, well, what does this mean? And they asked the question back to us, well, what does it mean to you? So it's not necessarily defined, so it's very broad. But still, it's worth going through that sort of process to sort of think, okay, how does the project meet these objectives? So outcomes reporting. I could probably talk to this slide for an hour on its own. I will try not to, because, yeah, the CAOs in the room will probably be more, this slide is more important to them. But there is a number of different reporting requirements within the agreement. So there's yearly reporting requirements, and that has changed. So we actually have moved it forward 1 month. So I believe it's June 1st now is the deadline for annual reporting. We have outcome reportings twice in 2018 and 2023. And that is where we're sort of looking at the projects that have been built and how those projects have met the national objectives. So the outcomes, we're doing some work on defining what those outcomes are, but there will be a significant amount of work done with that. You know, the importance of it is that, and it really speaks to sort of the relationship UBCM has with local governments in running this program, and then local governments and UBCM has with the federal government. The federal government, in order to maintain the funding and to ensure that there's a, you know, that flow of funding remains or continues, needs to ensure to auditors, you know, and the general public that the money is being spent well. And part of that is ensuring that the outcomes are achieved. And so part of that is us working with you with outcome reporting, and then us taking that information and providing the information that the federal government needs. And it's pretty standard for any grant program, whether it's you know, small or large. One significant piece that's I wanted to mention here is with respect to asset management. So asset management has now become an integral part of the gas tax agreement. So that means local governments have a commitment to move forward with asset management. I'm a big advocate of asset management on the side, and believe it is a key tool and a key process to help local governments. I think yesterday evening there was some talk about infrastructure debt and financial accountability, and asset management is a tool and a process that helps local governments get there, helps them makes good decisions. So within the gas tax program, asset management will become a requirement, so there is some commitments for local governments. Those are currently being developed right now. They're not necessarily designed to be prescriptive for local governments. So the idea here is, you know, the agreement has a commitment for local governments to move forward with asset management. We want it to be somewhat self-directed. So yes, local governments will have a commitment with asset management, but they will sort of identify the direction that they take with asset management. So the requirements will reflect that, or the commitment. So we're working on that right now. I expect that we'll be able to provide information to local governments sometime early in the next, in this year. So probably end of January or February. So it's a key piece to be aware of as you move forward with any work under the agreement. Transition, probably not a huge deal for most in the room. The CAOs will be somewhat familiar with the transition components of the agreement. Basically, what is it saying is that unspent funds, so any money that you have from the old agreement that isn't spent, basically gets folded into the new agreement. There is another piece of funding that was not spent before December 31st, 2013, spent before April 1st of 2014 had to be reported in the under the old agreement, and then funding that was received in 2014 after April 1st had to be reported in the under the new agreement. So there are some local governments that will have to double report for 2014, but not necessarily an issue for you, just extra work for your staff. Interest, this is just a piece of information just for you to understand that UBCM administers the program, so federal funding comes from the federal government to UBCM. UBCM has a special account where that money sits, and then we distribute it to local governments. While that money is in that account, it actually does collect interest. And so under the first agreement, we earned approximately $8 million. So what we're doing with that $8 million over the next 2 years is just putting it back into the program. So it just gets rolled over back in the program and is divided within the programs as determined by the agreement. So that's it for the gas tax program. Like I said, it is the biggest funding portfolio that's available to you right now. And so I wanted to spend a little bit more time on that. I'm going to quickly go over some of the other smaller programs that UBCM is responsible for delivering.
Question?
Yep. Right, and actually captured under legislation. So there's actually a piece of legislation. So that's a good question. I actually don't have the answer, or I don't have a good answer for it. I've got an answer for everything, but I don't necessarily have a good answer. My sense is it will not impact. I mean, currently under the agreement that we have right now, and in part, I mean, part of these revenues are from consumption, right, not production.
So my sense is similar to Glenn's. It's that budget is budget, so that's what's committed in legislation for the program. It could hurt if the whole national budget is affected by the price of oil and production, and then there will be ripples through your federal budget through a lot more gas tax. But this is a program commitment over multi-years, so it's outside the kind of consumption idea, so you should be sheltered. Drastic
lifts
or anything like that.
We have a question on process.
Sure.
If the intake is April 15th, then it goes to the technical review panel, right?
Yes.
All right. After that, it would go to recommendation for or is it go to
a management committee.
And then there's a notification process, and then realistically, funds aren't going to flow until either very late 2015 or early 2016.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, I would sort of anticipate that announcements would be in the fall.
So, and then the aspect inside of the RTCA process is on most communities that we've undertaken will facilitate a lot of that requirement for asset management.
It takes you only so far.
If you
use it as it's the foundational piece for local governments to move forward, absolutely.
Yeah. What's the acronym?
Tangible capital assets. So PSAB 3150. So the newer accounting requirements. So we certainly will have more time for questions after. I'm going to run through these programs fairly quickly and then get to the new Building Canada Fund shortly as well. Yeah, still have quite a bit of time. So local government program services, it's a fairly, when you consider how old and how long UBCM has been around, this is a fairly new component, a new area, service area for UBCM. So roughly 2001 is when UBCM started getting into the program delivery business. And so since then, we've done a number of different programs, primarily provincial funding, but also some provincial federal funding programs. predominantly, these are programs that you know, the province is coming to us looking for a third party to deliver because they cannot do it for one reason or another. I will not get into those reasons during this discussion. So current programs include so an asset management planning program, regional community-to-community forums, so that's sort of a First Nation community engagement program, senior housing and supportive initiative, and the strategic wildfire preventative initiative. I've got the last one there, structural protection units. This isn't really a program. These are sort of wildfire interface fire units. They're actually what are they?
They're an asset.
They're actually a like a trailer that goes out and protects property in the case of interface fire. We own the asset. It's actually managed by the wildfire branch of the province. So the asset management planning program is a new program. It was launched in December. So it is designed to support local governments in moving forward with some of their asset management initiatives. It aligns with the gas tax program and the gas tax requirements for asset management. We are currently have an intake right now. It closes March 20th. It's a $1.5 million program offering grants of up to $10,000, and it's cost shared 50-50. So getting $10,000 from this program for a $20,000 project, you as a local government have to come up with the other $10,000 that can be in-kind and or financed through reserves or whatever. Or you can actually use Community Works funds to support that, your share. Regional community-to-community forums. So this is a long-standing program that's been funded by the provincial and federal government. So it's really a First Nation engagement program. Small program. It's roughly been approximately $100,000 per year. It's been a largely successful program. A lot of local governments have used this program to build relations with First Nations. So there will be an intake. So it does say funding permitted, permitting, and actually, just the day before I came here, I signed the agreement with the federal government, so we do have funding available for 2015. Senior Housing and Supportive Initiative. So this is sort of the age-friendly program. Once again, it's been a program that's been run for a number of years, subject to available funding. We do have some funding from the provincial government to run for 2015. Grants of up to $20,000. Once again, it's a cost shared program, and there will be an intake in 2015 for that. And the Strategic Wildfire Preventative Initiative started in 2004, so right after the wildfire season in 2003. This program has been running. And since its inception, I think there's been about, it's been valued at about $62 million, so about $62 million have run through this program. We currently have an intake coming up in January 30th to 2015. It is actually only for protection plans, so the actual funding available right now is limited. We're hopeful that this program will continue. The provincial government, at least at a staff level, has identified that there's interest to continue, and we're basically waiting to see if they'll get a Treasury Board approval to continue this program beyond 2015. But it's been another highly successful program for those communities that are dealing with interface fire issues. So just as a heads up or for a contact. So the local government program services area of UBCM is actually run by 1.5 FTEs. So there's two people that manage all these programs, and they're available to take any questions that yourselves or your staff have. So use them as a resource. And I do believe these presentations will be available on the LGLA website, so you don't feel that you have to scribble down all the notes here. So I'm sort of moving towards areas that UBCM is not responsible for the administration. We've certainly been involved with some of the negotiations and the development of these programs. I'm fairly familiar with these programs. I've recently come from the province and been involved with these programs, like I said, for the last 15 years. This is sort of just the overview of the Building Canada plan, the new Building Canada plan. So that's the federal funding package that's available. I talked about the gas tax fund that's in the red. So that's legislated funding that I talked about. So it's legislated that funding will continue. So the gas tax fund is a fund that UBCM is responsible for. The blue is the new Building Canada fund, and so the components that are available to local government are actually administered by the provincial government. There's two pieces there. There's a small communities fund, and then there's funding for national or regional projects. I won't get into the funding for national or regional projects, but I will be talking a little bit to you about the small communities fund. There's one other piece that's worth mentioning, and that's the P3 Canada Fund worth $1.25 billion. So that is a program that's available to all local governments. It's public-private partnerships. Actually, just before I came to UBCM, so I've been with UBCM for about 8 months, I had a meeting with P3 Canada, and they were looking for projects, right? So they didn't have enough projects to spend their money. My word of caution is moving forward with the P3 project, you have to do your homework, right? You have to understand what a P3 is about and whether it's the right fit for the project and a right fit for your community. It's a complex and convoluted process, and it's a huge commitment to your community to go forward with the P3. Anyway, it is available. To be able to get additional information, there is P3 Canada in BC. There's Partnerships BC. Either one of those two, you can get information from them. Be aware that the information you get from them will be somewhat biased to the P3. I would also suggest that the province, in particular the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development, their infrastructure and engineering branch, they'd be able to provide information, and I do have a contact up there in this presentation for them. So anyway, getting on to the Small Communities Fund. It's a small program being run over the next 10 years. So it's a one-third, one-third, one-third program. So that's a traditional federal-provincial program. Local governments, everyone's to provide one-third. So when you look at the program, it's $327 million when you talk about total project costs or total eligible project costs. It is available to communities of 100,000 population or less. And currently, they have an intake that's open. So they're accepting applications, and that's closing February 18th. They have identified that they're looking at allocating about 50% of that pot under the first intake. A bit of a change is eligible applicants. Once again, local governments are an eligible applicant. First Nations are actually eligible under this program. I think the caveat for First Nations is any project that they move forward with has to provide a service outside of their community. So it has to be a service that's provided to the greater community. Provincial entities and or public sector bodies are also eligible, as well as private sector bodies. That's for-profit and non-for-profits. So that's a bit of an expansion on eligible applicants. Right now, eligible applicants may submit one application for this intake. So it's your one priority project. There's no regional districts here. There's a slightly different rule for regional districts. So eligible project categories under this program, similar to gas tax, so fairly broad, except that there is no recreation, sport, tourism, culture, or capacity building. So there's no opportunity for non-capital projects. The other important piece under this program is the new stacking rules. Previously, the federal government had a stacking rule that it would not fund more than 50% of any particular project. So what that means is if you are successful under this program, per se, you could use your community works fund under the gas tax to top it up by an extra 17%, right, to get the federal contribution. What they're saying is being successful under this program, you know, there is no opportunity to use community works fund to sort of help support your one-third share. Your one-third share is going to have to come from other sources other than gas tax. Important, particularly for smaller local governments who are strapped for opportunities to find the resources to pay their one-third share. Got one bullet talking about the UBCM role. As I said, we're not part of the administration of the program. We've been part of the negotiations to some degree, a lot less this time with respect to the development of the agreement, of the framework agreement. But we have been asked to have a role with respect to being on the management committee, or the oversight committee is what they call it. So that's the group that actually does the approvals. We don't have a vote, but we really have an observation role. So that observation role is to actually ensure that the process is transparent and they're doing what they're supposed to be doing as per the agreement. So we take that role seriously. And, you know, for me, having a little bit of the inside story on how this process worked before, it'll be very enjoyable to be part of this process on the other side. So as I said, it's administered by the province. Two ministries, so they share. I won't get into the details of how they share this program, but the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development and the Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure. The website there is where all the program documentation lives. A contact, Laird McLaughlin, he's with the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development, so he's their lead for the Small Communities Fund. He actually came from Ministry of Transportation, so he's familiar with both sides of the program. So he's probably a good contact for you and or your staff, at least initial contact. There's others there, but you know, my suggestion is contact the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development for your inquiries to begin with. So that's it. I know there's a lot of information there. I think, as I said, the one big takeaway is just to know that UBCM staff, myself, and the other staff working on the gas tax and the other programs are there as a resource for you. So at this point in time, I'll take any questions that anyone has.
On the Go to Canada Fund, so the first intakes now, well, half the fund. Do you have any sense what future intakes are going to look like, when, how much?
You know, we don't. We did have some discussions with the province, and prior to the strategic priorities fund intake, so that pooled funding under gas tax, and the Building Canada Fund, the Small Communities Fund intake. We had some discussions to talk about how we could align to make sure that there wasn't, you know, there was overlap where there should be, and over say the next 5 years, how is it going to look? That seemed to all go to pot once there was an announcement at the UBCM convention last September. So I think what we'll have to do is actually get back at the table with the province and do our best to make sure we've got some logic behind these intakes as we move forward, recognizing that we've got a finite amount of funding available to local governments, and let's make sure that we sort of do it in a logical and practical way.
It's very
say that the federal fall election is going to have
sure that is
sometimes that factors in.
Yes. Sorry, in the back there.
Hi. I'm from Cultus Lake, and we have a unique government structure there, and we don't really qualify for all these grants. I'm just wondering about this Building Canada Fund and the extended qualifications that you talked about. Would we qualify under that for these grants?
You know, that's a good question. Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I don't think I'd be able to answer that. Like I said, I probably could answer it, but I'm not the person to answer it. So I would talk to staff at the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development to get clarification on that. Certainly, as I mentioned, the rules are slightly different for regional districts. So a regional district can apply one application for each community area, and a community area is defined as sort of a settlement area and or existing or proposed service area. So Cultus Lake would sort of qualify as an application under the regional district for certain. Whether you actually apply under the new rules for eligible applicants is not something I'd be able to answer for you. Any other questions?
Yeah, that staffing rule of 50% announced 33, when did that come into effect?
That came into effect under the new Building Canada Fund. So the framework agreement that came under the new Building Canada Fund, so recently. So previous programs under the gas tax, the previous Building Canada Fund did not have that rule. It's a new rule.
Hi. So I'm wondering, like, one of the things that I'd like to really envision happening is if the communities that want to do projects in the future have some help with being able to get those shelf-ready plans in place, because that's a huge cost for a small community. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if any of these programs are applicable to that issue.
Yes. So... So under the gas tax, under capacity building, so I believe there's some opportunity there to use capacity building to do some broader planning with respect to future infrastructure works. A program that I didn't mention that's actually administered through the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development is an infrastructure planning grant program. So that is a program designed to support that initial work that needs to be done to support a project. You know, ultimately, a lot of local governments use that program to build the information necessary to apply for a capital project. So that's available on their website. So that's the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development.
So it's about $54 million
that the
federal government will kick into this first round of applications.
Yes.
Five years.
Right.
So we've got $54 million and we've got $54 million.
Right. It's not a huge pot, particularly when you think of it's a 10-year program, and you know that UBCM we identify that right off the bat, and have certainly had correspondence with the province and the federal government, sort of showing our concern with the fact that you know you've got this very small pot of money, and you know the federal government and the province itself has identified you know the huge need. You know, not only with sort of tabling the infrastructure gap, but just understanding that there's a huge need for infrastructure to meet new standards that are being created both federally and provincially, and to meet that backlog of infrastructure.
So a follow-up to that, for those of us that are in the Metro Vancouver Regional District, we've got roughly $50,000 of change in
That is correct. I didn't talk about, you know, so there was the slide that sort of showed the overview of the New Building Canada plan. There was about $10 billion for sort of regional and provincial priorities, and then there's small communities fund. That piece there is a bit of an enigma in the province. We've certainly identified our concern with that. Even the province has to some degree. But, you know, the problem is that this funding should be made available to local governments. And there's not a clear path on how local governments can access that funding. So maybe it's designed for bigger projects, but, you know, there's no application process. We're left a little bit in the dark on how, you know, if there is any process, how is that working? I know some local governments have gone directly to the province and the federal government to identify, hey, right, including Metro Vancouver, say, hey, we got some big sewer projects. You know, is there an opportunity to access? But I think it's really been a challenge, and it's been a shortfall in that program is how local governments can access that funding. Certainly our concern is there's a big lineup of provincial agencies who want to spend that money on highways and bridges. But how can we get local governments to get access to that funding as well? Pardon me?
To your answer, there is no answer. How do you get to the pot of gold here?
How do you get to that pot of gold?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my colleagues identified here. This is the big black box here.
For larger projects.
People who are small communities would like to have a piece of that.
Yeah, well, as a small community, you know, you're eligible to apply under the Small Communities Fund, right? And as a small community, you're within the GVRD?
Yeah.
So within the GVRD under the gas tax, you can't apply for the Strategic Priorities Fund, right? Collectively, cannot, right? Yeah. So
the larger communities are not eligible to apply for the $110 million fund at all, so they're completely shut out from that. With respect to the New Building Canada Fund, larger communities over 100,000 are not eligible to apply for the small communities component at all. So they have no funding application available to them except through the provincial territorial component of Building Canada. We would argue that both they and you should be eligible to apply to that. The challenge is provincial infrastructure is also eligible. So if you're the province of BC and you own infrastructure, would you be more likely to end up funding local governments or your own bridges and highways? And that is what we see as the problem, because that's the majority of funding in the program. So, not a great answer, but it's as much as we know.
Just out of curiosity, how many communities are under 100,000?
All six. There's eight. Over 100,000?
Eight, I believe. Yeah.
So I think we're at the end of our time. Thank you very much for your questions today. They've been very helpful. What we're going to ask you to do is basically pick up and go next door. There will be an intro session next door. LGLA will introduce and do a bit of an overview of the day. And then Gord McIntosh is on at 8:35, and he's going to really talk about the framework and the council CAO model. So thanks very much for your time this morning. Thank you, Glenn.